Hi, folks. This is Craig Van Slyke. Welcome to the Rational Ignorance Podcast, where we talk about facts, values, and living life well.
Hi, everyone. I'm Andrea Christel, a philosopher and outdoor enthusiast who lives in Sedona, Arizona.
And I'm a business professor, author, and rancher who lives in the middle of the woods in Iris, Louisiana. We're here to have fun, practical conversations with smart, interesting people to help us cut through the noise and get to what really matters.
Rational ignorance is an idea from economics that basically means there is a limit to what we need to know. So we'll skip the small stuff, focus on what really matters, and separate the wheat from the chaff.
If you're like most people, every day you're faced with an almost limitless information tsunami. For many of us, most of our waking hours are spent dealing with information, much of which comes from our leisure time. Unfortunately, much of our so-called downtime is spent dealing with this constant barrage of information. News stories, advertisements, social media feeds, text messages, all of these flood our brains with information. In our device-tethered lives, we rarely take the time to step away from the information the world throws at us and simply tune out. In this episode, we're going to discuss the idea of tuning out, starting with the need to tune out, followed by the benefits and risks of tuning out. Then in the last segment, we're going to offer some advice on how to start selectively tuning out and how to build the practice of tuning out into our lives. So, Andrea, why should we have an episode about tuning out?
But Craig, really, it's for many of the reasons that you just mentioned. The 24/7 news, social media, and so many things that compete for our attention all the time. And I think that there is so much pressure to learn more and know more. But occasionally, instead of taking in more information, we just need to stop the flow of information and take time to rest and time to reflect.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about where that need might come from. I know a lot of times when I'm just faced with all this information coming at me, I feel tired. And so I wanted to talk for just a second about why that might be. And if I could preface this with a disclaimer that neither of us are experts in this area. You know, there are psychologists and communication scholars and other folks who, you know, spend their lives researching some of the things that we're talking about today. And so we're going to kind of give the, I don't know if overview is quite the right word, but we're going to give the layperson's view of some of this. So any of you who are, you know, experts on some of these theories, we apologize in advance. Feel free to berate us on our Twitter feed or, you know, to your significant other or whatever. But no, seriously, we'd love to hear from you if we've gotten any of this wrong. So there are a lot of theories of attention. We could do multiple episodes just on the idea of attention and still not really do the topic justice. So we're just going to pick a reasonable way to go about this. And I'm a fan of Kahneman's capacity view. It just kind of makes sense to me. So the way that we can think about this is your attention is a limited resource. You know, and like any limited resource, you have to make decisions or your brain has to make decisions about what to attend to and what not to attend to. And so that causes kind of a cognitive capacity problem when we have to consciously make those decisions. And so most folks who are experts in this area kind of separate between the automatic way that our brain decides to pay attention, like if somebody shouts, or if you hear a car wreck behind you, or a dog starts growling, we don't decide this is something I should pay attention to or this isn't. We just pay attention to it. We just attend to it automatically. So that's not what we're talking about here. And so when we have the world like we have today with just all of these stimuli coming at us almost constantly, our brain can get bogged down in just deciding what to pay attention to. I don't know, Andrea, have you ever felt that way when maybe you're trying to research something or there's something going on that you're interested in and you just go down this rabbit hole of finding more and more stuff and trying to figure out what you should be paying attention to and what you shouldn't?
Yes, I mean, that's definitely happened to me. I think that it's happened to most of us. And I would say that, you know, to your earlier point, even though neither one of us are technical experts in the field of attention, in a way, everybody is kind of an expert on this because we are all directing our attention on a daily basis. And this is something that everyone deals with and experiences. And one thing we do know is that even if we wanted to fully focus our attention all day, we can't really effectively do that. Our attention is a limited resource, as you mentioned. And so one strategy is just to come to terms with that fact and recognize that you're only going to have a really focused or deep attention for a limited period of time. So I think that there are really at least two issues here. One is how long can you really sustain a focused attention on any topic? And then two, which is like, where do you direct that attention? And I think that you're right. If you start reading an article that you're interested in, almost inevitably, it's going to link to other articles that will link to other sources. And so with the ease of information access we have right now, we really have to make strategic decisions about where we're going to spend our time. And so we have to make strategic decisions about what we're going to pay attention to and realistically accept that our attention, as you said, is a limited and finite resource.
And by strategic, I'm taking that to mean purposeful, not as opposed to accidental. Is that the way you're using the word strategic?
Right. I mean, what do I care about most right now? What am I interested in researching? What projects am I working on? What did just come up in my Twitter feed or someone mentioned to me that I had never heard of before, but is of interest? So I think that we're constantly juggling these priorities, and like it or not, most of us are barraged with information so that new things do come up. And I think that it's in those instances that we have to be strategic, and number one, about how much we expose ourselves to the sort of, you know, random onslaught of information that we get, whether it's in our email inbox or the various social media platforms that we're engaged in. I think we can intentionally tune those things out. But I think it's quite difficult for most people, for me often, to do that because those platforms are set up to be addictive. I mean, it's not neutral.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm working on something that's really difficult, maybe it's easy to pull away from that and check an email or, you know, see what's on Twitter. So it takes a certain amount of self-discipline to decide, you know, I'm going to set aside these 90 minutes and work on something. For me, that's probably about as long as I can maintain sustained attention on any one question. And then I'll go back from that and check email or do a more routine administrative task.
Well, so you bring up an interesting point. I want to see if I can get to where I want to get to with this. So I look at this whole issue as being kind of a series of things that we have to do. So assuming that we're not talking about automatic processing, when something comes into our awareness, we first have to cognitively figure out how much attention we should be paying to that. All right. So that takes part of our cognitive capacity, because if you think about it, you're taking this stimulus and you're trying to fit it into what your brain already knows to determine whether or not you should give it attention. All right. So that's all requiring your cognitive capacity, which is also limited, just like our attention is limited. And so just like a computer that runs out of memory, you know, our brains can kind of do the same thing. And this attention problem gets exacerbated because of the limited information capacity problem, processing capacity problem. You know, it's like the attention piece is almost a double whammy, because not only does the attention take our cognitive resources, but deciding whether or not we should pay more attention or less attention to this thing also takes our cognitive capacity. So there's this filtering that goes on first. So there's something that comes in, you know, there's a news story. You know, you've got the news on in the background, a news story comes up that comes into your awareness, and you have to filter it as either in your discard pile, I'm not going to pay any attention to it, or I should consider this further. And then you're taking in more stimuli and kind of refining that decision. And you that takes your, you know, takes your brain power. And then once you decide to more or less fully attend to that new thing, now you have to make sense out of it. So what does this do? Does, you know, how does this fit into my current relevant mental models? How do I need to adjust those mental models, you know, to help make sense of this new information? And then this is where it gets even worse, at least for me. That triggers a desire to get more information because I can't quite make sense totally out of this new information. And so it really can be this rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times I've gotten myself into a mental frenzy over stuff that at the end was just kind of dumb, you know, and pointless. So it really is, the attention piece is really a challenge.
Right. Well, I think that people by nature are curious. So when we learn about something new, some topic of interest, then we tend to want to find out more about that. We also, as people, like to learn. And so it's kind of tantalizing when we hear about something that's new. I think people are attracted to novelty, to learning. They're curious. And so this all makes sense about why we behave this way. But you know, the ecosystem is such that we realize it's ultimately not productive. And so I think one of the reasons we wanted to talk about tuning out is because, kind of counterintuitively, perhaps, tuning out actually enables us better to tune in to those right. things that we really care about. And so even if we seem to be tuning out, what are we tuning out? I think what we want to tune out are the extraneous things, or perhaps the more random things that are pitched at us for our attention, because our attention is valuable to other people that want us to learn about their message, and to really take control and say, you know, I've established ahead of time that these are the things I care about or where I want to focus my attention, and I'm going to tune out from anything that's extraneous so that I can tune in to what I know is valuable.
Right. I think that's really the heart of the matter is what we're talking about here is tuning out so you can tune in. And I also would not advocate for completely reining in curiosity. You know, there's nothing wrong with curiosity. You know, I think you hit on another important point earlier when you were talking about it being strategic. So it's okay to have times when you're just kind of randomly going down these garden paths of this or that. Like one of the things I like to do, if Tracy and I are sitting watching TV, there'll be some actor that's up on the screen that either I don't know, or, you know, one of us will say, well, wasn't she in this or that? Or I recognize this person. Where do I know her from? And I'll get my phone and I'll go on Google and I'll look up wherever the actor is. And, you know, I kind of enjoy that. You know, it's fun. It's a little thing for us. And I see nothing wrong with that, because all it's doing is drawing attention away from something else that really doesn't matter at that point. You know, that's kind of downtime where I don't want to really have to learn and have to, you know, get in depth on anything. Because if I don't remember who we were talking about two nights later, who cares? That doesn't matter. And so I think being purposeful about these things is one of the real keys to kind of navigating all of this. I also can get carried away when I do that. So I'll find, you know, I'll be reading some Wikipedia article about an actor, and then it mentions a movie, and then I say, oh, I remember that movie, and then I'll look up that movie, and that'll mention another actor, and I realize that I a little while ago I was sitting there with Tracy, and now I'm sitting there in my own little Wikipedia, you know, iPhone bubble. And so, you know, you want to draw limits to all of that. But it does come back to the idea of being purposeful. I think what's gotten really bad, and God, I know this is going to make me sound old, but it's just constant now. It's absolutely constant. You know, there's always news on TV. There's always your phone or your tablet or your computer. We're always getting text messages. You know, even for work, it's this 24/7 thing. You know, I started leaving my phone in the kitchen when I went to bed at night because I don't want to wake up because of some stupid email. But it just never stops.
Oh, yeah. I definitely leave my phone in the living room before I go to bed. I don't take it to bed with me. And you're right, like all the ways that people have to reach us. I was just, you know, yesterday was Friday and I was finishing out my week and I had certain emails I needed to attend to, certain Teams messages, certain things on Slack. And I thought, okay, I'm going to take care of everything I need to before I log off. Right. And I did that. And I put away my work computer, got out my personal computer because I was, you know, doing some work for a community organization, and picked up my phone. And I had a text message from someone I was working for. And I thought, oh, I didn't check. And then I had to shut down my personal computer, turn on my work computer, go back on and, you know, attend to that thing. But, yes, I mean, there's so many different channels that things are, ways that things come at us.
And it's really changed the expectations. Because we're so available, we feel like we should be so available a lot of times. You know, we're back back before, it's like, why are you calling me on a weekend? You know, I mean, if the building isn't burning down, or, you know, if our office didn't get flooded, man, this can wait till Monday. You know, we're not working in an ER. This can wait till Monday.
Yeah, although I have to say that COVID and doing all of our work now online and on Zoom in many ways has helped me, I think, develop a more healthy work personal life balance. Because I think before, when I would meet people in person, and I usually, you know, like working and like my job and am interested in what I'm doing, so that I would check my email at night and I would, you know, check my email during the weekend, and I would want to work on things. But after being on the computer all day, nonstop, in Zoom meetings, and then on the computer again at the end of the working day, or sometimes on the weekends, I am really ready to shut it completely down.
Well, I think that's really variable. I think some people have, you know, the reaction that you've had, and other people have found that work-life boundaries have completely disappeared. I think I've mentioned to you before that Tracy saying, well, you know, you work all the time now. And it's interesting. I don't think I work any more hours than I did pre-COVID, but she just didn't see it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd leave it before she got up in the morning and I'd get home late afternoon, and it just wasn't apparent. But that could be another interesting topic to pursue. So I think if we take all of this together, we believe that we can build a case for selectively and purposely purposefully strategic. Mm-hmm. We'll just call it strategic because that's a lot easier to say. Purposefully tuning out. So let's switch gears, if we could, and talk about what we might gain. What are the benefits of tuning out? So what do you see as some of the benefits of kind of tuning out from work on the weekends, or just tuning out in general?
Sure. So one benefit that we've talked about already is that tuning out allows you to tune in to what you really care about. So if you can tune out extraneous information, then you can focus on a particular project or task that you know really matters to you, that you care about, that you want to make progress on. But that's one way of tuning out, right? So that you can more effectively tune in. But there's also a tuning out that is really just removing your attention from anything. And we've all heard about mindfulness meditation. That's very popular. And I think the reason that it's popular is because it's very beneficial, especially in this time when we tend to be so barraged with information. It can be very helpful to just really give ourselves a break. And so then there is this other way of completely tuning out, right? And just focusing our attention on our breath, or on a simple counting exercise. And of course, there are various forms of meditation, whether it's a guided meditation where someone is focusing your attention on different objects, whether that's a thought, a pattern, or paying attention to, you know, different aspects of your body, or simply trying to hold attention on not having attention, allowing nothing to come into your mind. When something does come into your mind, allowing those thoughts to release and go away. And why do we do this? We find pretty widely that there are tremendous benefits to completely tuning out as well.
Yeah, that's a pretty high bar for most of us. Sorry, I needed to make a little microphone adjustment there. Yeah, I want to be really careful about how I say this. This is not an all or nothing. I mean, the concept of fully shutting my brain off is just so far outside of anything I've ever done. You know, it's like, nope, I'm not even going down that path because it just feels impossible to me. I mean, it really does. I'm sure it is possible, and I'm sure if I devoted enough time to it, I could develop these practices. But this is going to sound really bad. You know, who has time for that? Who has time for that? And so I think if you do, that's wonderful. You know, if you've built up this capability over the years and you have this, you know, or if you want to give it a try, that's great. But I think we can take kind of baby steps too that can be helpful. Let me give you an example of one that I do. When I go out to do what I refer to as convict work, which is, you know, go out and digging rocks, and my task for this afternoon is digging out one of the horse stalls, which is a particularly unpleasant task because of the state of horse stalls. But I don't take my phone with me. You know, I don't put a pair of earbuds in and listen to music or anything. I just go out there. And my brain certainly is not turned off, but I'm focused on a pretty menial task. And I didn't mean any insults to anybody who's been convicted of a crime and had to work on a chain gang. I don't think they have chain gangs anymore. But anyway, when I go out there to do something physical like that, it's kind of a time to just be. And even though it's really hard work. I'm talking about digging wet dirt down to where we've got rock. So that'll be a 12 by 12 stall, about 3 or 4 inches of wet dirt. You know, I'm an old man. That's tough work. But in some weird ways, I kind of look forward to it because it forces me to kind of disconnect. Can't really concentrate on anything because my back is so sore. It's kind of neat to just go out there and be, and I can listen to the birds. You know, we live in the woods. I can listen to the birds and I can listen to the goats talking to me. And it's just, so even if you don't think that you can get all the way to what you were mentioning earlier, man, it's just some little baby step, I think, can be really rejuvenative for us. Is that a word, rejuvenative? I think it is. It is now.
Yeah. Rejuvenating. Yeah. I think you're right. And I think that, you know, what you're describing as baby steps might be a full on meditation, actually. And I think that it's interesting how much, language sometimes can get in the way. Which is one of my favorite topics, is like, what is meditation? So now we're both talking about meditation, but I think we might be thinking of different things when we're using this same word. And so I think there's one conception of meditation that's popular that means I can't be physically moving. My legs need to be crossed. My eyes need to be closed, right? My hands need to be in a certain sutra, perhaps. And that's one way of meditating, and perhaps one of the most commonly conceived images that is conjured up when we describe meditation. But there are certainly moving meditations, walking meditations, and I think that doing the kind of physical labor that you're describing can be conceived as a meditation. So it's anything where we really are effectively tuning out, and it sounds like because you know, aren't listening to a podcast, for example, when you're out there, or music, or, you know, just doing this repetitive task and sort of setting your mind at ease, right? That can be a meditation. Now, if you're out there, digging a horse stall and, you know, making a plan for your next syllabus, right? Then that's not quite a meditation, right? But if you're just focused on the activity of digging itself, right? And just paying attention to this routine activity, or just walking and just noticing, you know, nature around you and really allowing things to come into your attention, then that's a real reprieve from checking email or attending right. to whatever information is coming to us. And I'm sure is very restorative in a sense, even though it's hard work. And even though you're physically tired in a way, I would ask you if you're in some way restored or renewed or refreshed by just getting away from all of the external stimuli.
I think the short answer to that is yes, mentally. Although I it might be meditation because I have a mantra. Why don't I live in a condo?
Oh, this is sounding like meditation.
My mantra is, why don't I live in a condo? Why don't I live in a condo? Why don't I live in a condo? I frequently remind Tracy that when we met, I had no yard. Literally, I lived in a townhouse, no yard. And then I upgraded to a concrete backyard, which we dug out. I paid $3,000 to have these guys come in and break up all this concrete in this little backyard. We lived in a really nice townhouse in Lafayette Square in St. Louis. And these guys came in, broke all this stuff up, put grass down, which didn't grow. And then the dogs were afraid of the back step and wouldn't go out there. So not my highest return on investment, but it's a good run of joke for the marriage.
Yes, and talk about baby steps. You took baby steps, and then at some point you took a big leap to where you are now.
Yeah. We have reached the peak. We are going to start on the downside if we ever move. So, I think the point is you can make some conscious decisions to kind of leave some stuff, leave some of this interference, these information sources behind periodically. And just let yourself kind of this is another meditation thing, kind of be in the moment. And so go ahead, sorry.
And I was just going to say, it can be very accessible, and it can be through, gardening or working outside, or sometimes even doing the dishes can be a meditation. I mean, tuning out is just really stopping a sort of chatter, or what some people sometimes call like a monkey mind, just like stopping the constant chatter that can go on in our own minds. And so part of that is stopping the external stimuli from coming in, but it's also a way of really quieting our own minds, because it's not right. just external stimuli, right? It can really be like a sort of conversation happening in your own mind.
Our internal dialogue. What I find interesting about some of this, and it might be, mowing the pasture, it might be, working out in the, in the barn or whatever, but that creates some cognitive space for things to kind of percolate. And so often I'll get some little epiphany is probably too strong of a word, but, I'll have some research project I'm working on or that I might see in a different light, or I might come up with a solution to a problem we've got on a paper. And so I think one of the things about kind of stopping that noise, that monkey mind, is that it gives you some space for a different kind of cognitive processing, for your mind to work in a different way and kind of let it sit. And, I'm sure we've all heard stories about eureka moments when, it's at Archimedes was taking a bath or, whatever it might be, where these brilliant people have some brilliant thing come to them when they're engaged in a mundane activity. So it can, doing these kinds of things actually can spur your creativity and a different kind of cognitive processing.
Absolutely. And I think since we know that there are those benefits, that we've experienced them, that they're well documented for, thousands of years, I think the question then becomes, Why aren't we all doing this more all the time, right? There are obvious benefits associated with it. So what are the challenges? What gets in the way?
I have two – I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off there.
No, go ahead.
I have two big reasons. One is we mistake activity for productivity or achievement. So, we're busy. We feel like we need to be busy. We need to be busy, busy, busy all the time. And, that doesn't necessarily mean you're being effective just because you're being busy. That always blew my mind when I'd hear some of my colleagues, who weren't maybe publishing as much as me or, were teaching fewer students or whatever. And they say, I'm working 70 hours a week. And I look at them and say, then you're doing it wrong. Most college professors, God, don't jump on me too much about this, listeners, you know, you can do a really good job in 40 hours a week or so. You know, you don't have to spend 70 hours a week doing it. And if you start to dig in a little bit, you find they're wasting a lot of time. It was some of these attention problems that we've talked about. And so, and you know, there are tons of systems for taking care of, you know, those kinds of problems. So that, all I want to do is point out that that's one of the reasons that we can get ourselves into this kind of monkey mind is we feel like we always need to be doing something. And maybe you don't, you know, maybe it's better to kind of do nothing for a while and let yourself rejuvenate, let your mind kind of quiet and start to process things. So that's one reason. The second reason is FOMO, which is one of my favorite new terms, is the fear of missing out. And so we feel like we're going to be uninformed or we're going to miss out on something important or, you know, I might need to know about this. You know where I'm terrible about FOMO is the weather. And, you know, we live in a pretty – an area that's pretty prone to violent weather from time to time. And so it's prudent to pay some attention to it. But, you know, there'll be a storm coming through and I'll look at the radar and then I'll look at the radar again 5 minutes later. It's not, I mean, the front might be moving through, but the radar image is not going to change much in 5 minutes. But I feel like, you know, maybe there's a new cell popping up or maybe, you know, a cell has died down. I get to where I just can't leave it alone. And that's a fear of missing out thing. Am I going to miss out on something that's going to be useful? You know, sometimes missing out isn't a bad thing. You know, it's okay.
No, I think that's right. It's not. And I think, you know, we had Tara Zimmerman on a few weeks ago, and she talked about it's okay not to be aware of all the latest breaking news. But there is kind of a feeling when someone asks you, did you hear that this happened, that if you are a person that cares about what's going on in the world or your community, or you should have heard this if you were paying attention to the news. Otherwise, maybe, you know, you don't care enough to learn about recent political or current events, or you're not, that there is a fear of missing out and I think a culture that expects us to be aware of all the most recent headlines. But I think that's something to consciously try to overcome. And I think especially the news headlines, I would like to distinguish from the weather, which you mentioned, because I think the weather, especially some of the weather we've seen, you know, around this country and in the world lately, is something we all have to pay attention to. And I think if you're living in an area that's, you know, a hurricane susceptible area, then paying attention to the weather makes a lot of sense. But certainly there's a lot of news, a lot of political happening. That would it really make a difference if we got the headline the second the headline was released or a week later? And in most cases, probably very little.
But that's a big part of what causes this problem is this 24/7 news cycle. Used to be you would read the morning paper or you'd watch the morning news or you'd watch the evening news. And, you know, maybe you'd stay up until 11 o'clock and watch the 11 o'clock news. But now, sometimes we feel like we need to know about it immediately, you know, as it's happening. When in reality, there's rarely any benefit from that. There's rarely any benefit at all from being – now, you know, it's different with weather. If you've got a storm coming through, that kind of thing. But, you know, most things that happen in the world don't really affect us directly in the moment. And so it would be, as you're saying, it would be okay to find out about it the next day.
So if that's the case, and we know that we don't really have to find out about things right away, and that there are all kinds of benefits to tuning out occasionally, either so we can tune in and really focus on something we care about, or just give ourselves a kind of cognitive break, because it is on the one hand, has many benefits. One, it is restorative actually in itself, but also, as you mentioned, sometimes creative ideas then have the space to come up. And we know that there are benefits associated with that. How can we do that more effectively? What can we do to tune out? How do you do it? How do you get yourself to do it?
Well, so I think, God, this is going to sound so cliche. You know, the first step is awareness, kind of being aware when you're getting like that. When you feel yourself getting obsessed or, you know, feel like it's almost a withdrawal if you get away from something, but just knowing that feeling is pretty human, right? It doesn't make you a bad person. because you feel that way. So it's pretty human. And it's also not that difficult to make these small steps disconnecting. Well, let me give you an example. So one of the design firms I worked for back before I went to my PhD program, they had an hour every day where nobody was allowed to talk to each other and no phone calls got through. You know, this was before everybody had their own personal phone that they would use for work purposes, but it was, so everything came through a, it wasn't really a switchboard, but kind of like a switchboard. And so the receptionist had very strict instructions, you know, between, I don't remember when it was, but between 2 and 3 every day, unless it is a true emergency, nothing gets through. You take a message and everybody just worked. And there, a lot of these people were creatives, you know, they did planning and design on big communities. Kind of landscape design and urban planning, that kind of thing. But it was great. It was great. So you had that. And it wasn't that they were, you know, sitting around meditating. I mean, they were working, but they were focused. So, I mean, one way to tune out is to kind of do, you know, nothing mentally. I don't know if that's a really good way to describe it, but what we were talking about earlier, where you're doing something that's menial or you're actually trying to meditate. But that's not the only way of tuning out. You know, you can disconnect yourself from some of these distractions in order to create kind of time and space for better focus, which you mentioned right at the beginning, you know, this idea of being able to focus more on something. And so I think we can adopt something like that. You know, between, I don't know, 1 and 2 every day, I'm going to turn my cell phone off. I'm going to not have my email up. I'm going to disconnect from the internet and I'm just going to write. Or I'm going to get away from all of it and I'm going to take, you know, a notebook somewhere and just think and have ideas or work out some problem on a project. And that's not a difficult thing to do. You know, you could do that once a day, even if you did it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, it would be beneficial. So that's one way, pretty simple.
I love that idea, and I am going to put it into practice because 1 hour, it does seem like it's really doable. And I think that often, and I think this is a challenge, you know, many people have, or I have, when I have a task that I know is going to take much more than an hour, I feel like I have to find a block of time that would in some way be equivalent to what the task will require rather than just spending an hour or even a shorter amount of time chipping away at that thing. So that's maybe a kind of slightly different point, but just the idea of having that hour where no phone calls, no email, no anything gets through. And then yes, however you want to use that to work on a creative project or to just take that time. Well, sounds like a great idea.
A couple of add-on points. One is that an hour of focus time can be as good as 3 hours of unfocused time. You know, 1 hour with no distractions is going to be a lot more productive than multiple hours with distractions. You know, anytime we task switch, there's a startup cost. So, you know, if you're working on one thing and then you go to work on something else, you've got to kind of get yourself mentally oriented in that other thing. Then if you switch back to the first thing, you've got to get mentally oriented again into that first thing. And so, you know, there are switching costs that are involved in this task switching. And so one focused hour really could, I don't know, you know, who knows what the multiplier is, but there is some multiplier that's greater than one and how effective you can be in a focused hour. The other point is, which is kind of tangential, almost any task can be broken down into subtasks. And so, you know, don't focus on this is going to take, you know, 2 weeks. You know, 2 weeks is a bunch of 15 minuteses. I mean, we teach that when we're trying to help people write. So, yeah, you're going to write a 5,000-word article, but don't think of it that way. You know, I can't write 5,000 words. Okay, can you write 250 words? Yeah, I can do that. Well, you're just doing that 20 times, you know, so just pick 15 minutes or half an hour where you can write. And that's an oversimplification, but it's also an effective technique.
So I think this is really interesting because we've kind of, this conversation has moved from, you know, tuning out and focusing attention to strategies for working effectively. And these might seem like different things, but I think they're very much related, right? Yeah. Because really, when we get to like tuning out, like Why do we need to do that? Well, there are a few reasons. You know, one is just to step away from the constant barrage of information. Another is because it's a restorative practice and it actually makes us feel better. But three, you know, and what you're getting at here, which I think is really important, is, you know, how can we work most effectively? Given all the things that there are to do, what are some strategies that can help us really focus our attention on the things that matter and break things down and make progress on the projects that we care about most?
Yep, absolutely. So in some level of irony, I just got distracted because my phone flashed in my peripheral vision.
I think that's great. And I think that, you know, that's such a perfect example and shows how conscious and deliberate we need to be about it, because it used to be maybe you could step in your office and shut the door. And if nobody let a phone call through, right, and then it would be easy to not be distracted and to focus on the task at hand. And I think now we really do have to put our phones away, turn things off, go to a certain place, really set up the conditions for concentration, because almost like in our environments now, there are so many devices and mechanisms designed to try to seize our information.
Right. Yeah. Everything's trying to draw your attention. So there's a second approach that I think can be useful, and that's to pick something, you know, social media, email, whatever it might be, and find a period of time each day that you disconnect from that thing. Or if it's something that you can actually disconnect with for an extended period of time, take a break. You know, take a break from Instagram for the next week. Here's my big confession. I used to play Angry Birds every night. I'd go to bed and I'd have my little tablet there and I'd play Angry Birds. And I think it's a great game and I love Angry Birds. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, you launch birds at pigs and the structures pigs build. That's the basic premise. Yeah. The pigs have stolen birds and you're trying to get those birds back. So, you know, it's silly.
Yeah. I've never played Angry Birds. I have to confess, I have no experience, but it sounds like it could be fun.
It really is.
Heard of it. I've never played it, but I've certainly heard of it. So
Andrea is hip enough to have heard of Angry Birds. That's, but it's, you know, I find
somehow I don't think either one of us are going to get points for being hip for
well, Angry Birds. I think Birds. As soon as I use the word hip, I've proven that I'm not. Yeah.
Right.
At least I didn't say hep cat or groovy. Groovy was big when I was young. But what I did is, you know, I'm just going to not play this for a week. And I think I picked it up once since then, put it down, and I haven't played in, I don't know, several months. And I don't really miss it. You know, I just kind of do something else to kind of wind down. But you could take a break. You know, I'm going to take a break from social media, or I'm not going to put CNN on for the next, you know, 2 weeks or whatever it is. You know, I'm going to get my news in the morning. I'm going to look at the news in the morning, and that's it. Or I'm going to look at news in the evening. I recommend morning because you don't want to get worked up about something in the evening. So I think that can be an effective thing to do as well.
What I really like about that strategy is that you can sort of notice if this is something that you really miss and find valuable and enriching, or if it's just something you're in the habit of doing. I mean, Angry Birds, as great as it is, I'm sure, you know, you're like, well, look, I'm just playing this every night. This is what I did. But when I took a break from it, I didn't really miss it that much, even though it's entertaining, you know, or whatever. And I think also with watching the news, I suspect that if you didn't watch the news for a week, you might want to tune back into the news. But I think that's a great experimental technique to find out if you really enjoy or enriched by something, or if you're just in the habit of engaging in that activity.
I am a little worried about the kidnapped birds that I haven't been releasing.
Check on those. Yeah, that could be. It could be worth looking into.
Yeah, I mean, you may find that you want to go back to watching the news, but maybe you can do it in a different way. You know, instead of having it on all the time as background noise, you just decide, all right, I'm going to watch it. I mean, they replay this. CNN, Fox News, those kind of places, they tend to either get on some big news story and run it constantly, or they talk about the same things every hour. And so, you know, maybe you just watch it 1 hour and you'll get what's going on. So you may find that even if you decide, okay, I don't want to give this up completely, maybe I can do it in a way that still keeps me informed in the way I want to be informed, but doesn't divide my attention so drastically as it did in the past. And so I think that can be done.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think we want to be a little bit careful if you take this approach to not substitute one medium for another medium. So if you decide you're not going to watch CNN, you know, don't go to CNN's website and you know, have that just where you're just substituting, you know, cookies for candy kind of a thing. Tracy is making chocolate chip cookies as we speak. So
well,
they are on
fantastic.
My mind. Yes, she's quite good at cooking.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, it has its downsides, but which is my ever expanding wardrobe because of my ever expanding body. But that's another episode.
You just dig more horse stalls and even it out.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge. So I think we ought to, before we close, we ought to talk about a couple of kind of systematic approaches to making these sorts of changes that go beyond kind of tuning out. They can be applied to a lot of different things. And I think we should do episodes or even multiple episodes on each one of these. One is Franklin's Virtues.
Mm.
And so you can Google that and look it up. And Andrea and I, just as an aside, Andrea and I used to teach a freshman seminar on self-leadership, and we had the students do this. So Franklin had identified 13 virtues, 13 things that he wanted to be is really the right way to say it. You know, he didn't want to just kind of practice these things. He wanted to have these virtues part of who he was. And he set out, I'm going from memory, so I may get some of the details wrong, but he wanted to practice one virtue each week. He would really focus on that virtue, and he would pay attention to every time he violated that virtue, and he kept a journal where he noted every time he violated that virtue, and he'd reflect on that every night. And then the other virtues, if he kind of, when he was reflecting, if he remembered, you know, oh, he spent money unnecessarily that day, he'd mark it down, but he wasn't really focusing on that virtue. And in the end of a year, he would have focused on each one of these virtues for 4 weeks, but practiced each one of these virtues at some level for the entire year. And so it was a very, I think you could do something like that where, you know, at the end of the day, where was I unnecessarily distracted? You know, what can I do mm-hmm. about it? And how can I kind of correct this? And so that's something that folks might want to take a look at. And I really do think we should do at least an episode, but maybe a couple of episodes on that practice, because it can be very effective.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And you just reminded me of something that when we taught the class, of course, you know, Franklin has the 12 virtues that he's, you know, selected and finds the most important. But we also used to talk about what virtues are appropriate now, or asking people to think about the virtues you care about most and would like to cultivate. And it right. strikes me that a virtue that it would be very germane for the moment we're living in now would be something like right attention or correct attention. I mean, the very subject of this episode is like, how, you know, how can I, and virtue, by the way, just means like an excellence, right? Or a habit or a way of being that you care about and want to cultivate. And it seems to me that really attending to our attention and noticing how we spend our time would be something worth reflecting on and developing helpful habits around.
Right, right. Yeah, and when we did this with our students, they got to pick their virtues. So we gave them Franklin's virtues, but they could choose those or they could choose something else. And we let them kind of figure out who it was they wanted to be. I mean, that's really the key right. to this, is what kind of a person do you want to be? And the mm-hmm. the tuning out is just one little piece of that. But, you know, you really have to think about this. What kind of a person do I want to be? And that brings me to Aristotle.
Oh, good.
So, I know. Yeah, I think Andrea has a little crush on Aristotle. I'm not sure, but it seems that way from time to time. But
yeah, that time lapse
Yeah, that's a little bit of a problem.
Wendy Cope had a poem where she was, you know, in love with someone who had been dead since 1848 or something.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say this
one. And Aristotle's been dead for far longer than that, so.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, time could be cyclical, so, you know, it could come back around. We don't know. I'm going to say this wrong, but the Nicomachean Ethics, is that right? I didn't say that right.
Nicomachean. That's pretty close.
I was close. So Andrea introduced me to this, and I remember reading it and thinking, you know, I kind of get some of it, but most of it I don't understand. And you said something along the lines of, yeah, nobody else does either, so it's okay. But it's a but the piece of it that really stuck with me. Go ahead. Sorry, there's a rebuttal.
No, I was going to say I think that was Hegel, but
it could be both. I think it might have been both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had somebody in China tell me the same thing about the I Ching. I said, you know, I'm trying to understand the I Ching. Nobody understands that. So, but anyway, what stuck with me was this idea of Aristotle laying out, if you want to become something, you know, if you want something to be part of who you are, first you have to understand it. You have to receive instruction in it. Then you have to practice it. And over time, that practice becomes habit. And then over time, that habit becomes being. And it becomes part of who you are. And I'm sure I didn't really get that quite, you know, in the best way. But that's what stuck with me is if you want to change a piece of who you are, you know, you want to become a better person in some way, you figure out, okay, how does it get done? That's the instruction. And then you consciously, all right, I'm going to do this. And then it becomes a habit. And then it just becomes part of who you are. And so maybe you can tell me where I'm wrong about that or illuminate that a little bit.
You know, I think you've got it. I think that that's really it. I mean, Aristotle, you know, really did have the model of that. Our virtues are really habits or ways of being. And you know, it's the Nicomachean Ethics, but it was written for his son, Nicomachus. And you know, he wasn't writing that. We often think of like ethics as being kind of a pain or something we have to do or a box we have to check so we don't get in trouble. But really, this is a book that he wrote for his son about how to live a good life, right? This is not like a list of you must do's to be a good person. This is a list of, hey, here's all that I can share with you that I think will give you the best shot at being happy. And in the Nicomachean Ethics, you know, what do we want out of life? Well, it's like happiness or flourishing or, you know, to be content and satisfied with who we've become. So it's really a friendly and really like a loving, you know, message. And he's saying, you know, hey, look, just develop good habits, because if you do that, that will be who you are and what you naturally do.
Right.
And so if we have to struggle to do the right thing, you know, that it's still more honorable to have done the right thing than not, but you don't want it to be a struggle, right? You want it to be something that's easy, something that's a habit, something that you're accustomed to doing. And so, you know, Aristotle also thought that that was why it was really important, to develop these habits from the earliest age, right? So he says, you know, it makes no small difference how we were raised, but, you know, it's not a small difference, but rather all the difference. Right. And so we can, you know, if you have good habits growing up, that's fantastic. It's easier to maintain them. What if you don't? Well, it's possible to change, right? And so many of us have, you know, probably developed somewhat some habits about distractions, you know, playing games, attending to our phones, checking email constantly, all these habits that are very easy to develop when we have all these platforms that are designed to be addictive around us. By consciously paying attention to them, we can reform and reshape our habits and reshape ourselves.
Well, and I think that's one of the key points that we really want people to walk away from with, is that you can be the person that you want to be. You know, you get to decide what kind of person you're going to be and you know, what your values are, what you see as being important. And so, you know, that's within your agency. You know, you don't necessarily get to decide your salary and you don't get to decide where you live all the time. And there are a lot of things you don't get to totally control, but you can control the kind of person you are. And I think that's true for maybe not people that are really mentally ill, but you know, for most of us, we have some agency over that. And so it's a matter of putting in the effort to be who it is that you want to be the kind of person that you want to be and live the kind of life you want to live. But the reason I wanted to make sure we highlighted Aristotle a little bit is you have to stick with it. It isn't you learn about it and that's it. It isn't you learn about it and you practice it a little bit and that's it. You know, you're going to have slips and you're going to have missteps. And so you just go back and you analyze, okay, what do I need to do differently? And then you keep practicing and keep practicing. And eventually, I mean, it's almost, just to give you a really dumb example, when I coached basketball, we had kids go around and open doors and do stuff with their offhand, with their non-dominant hand. You know, so I'm right-handed. So I would start opening doors or opening my locker with my left hand. But over time, it's really kind of amazing. Over time, they would just get better with their non-dominant hand at basketball. And so, you know, even some little thing like that, you know, some of the things that we've talked about today can make a difference in helping you be the kind of person that you want to be. And so I think the subtext of a lot of what we're going to talk about is being purposeful and taking some control. And you can be purposeful about what you pay attention to and what you tune out from, and you can take control over that. Just give it some time. It's not going to be an overnight thing. Just, you know, let yourself screw up from time to time. Just come back from it and keep going and keep going. And eventually, you know, you'll get there.
That sounds great. All right. Let me ask you, Craig, at this week, we often have a little segment where we ask, you know, because we talk about these topics, but we want to know, like, more generally, what happened? What did you learn this week?
Well, I learned that computers can still be very frustrating. I'm having technology problems. And this is really one where I went down a rabbit hole. What I should have done is just backed up. I have a backup, anyway, of most of the important stuff. I should have just taken it to somebody and said, here, fix this. But I'll bet I've spent 10 or 15 hours in the last week messing around with all of this. And it's a relatively simple fix, you know, if you've got the right equipment. So it happens. I mean, it happens. And I'm not, I mean, I kind of secretly enjoy part of it too. So it's not, I used to be pretty in the weeds on the technology. So, but it's easy. I mean, you know, even if you're trying to tell yourself not to do these things, and there's a little, you know, the director's commentary in my head saying, oh, well, and here's where Craig's going to screw up again and spend another 2 hours doing something that he knows isn't going to work just because he wants to see if he can get it to work. But so that's my new obsession this week. But it'll be over soon. I've got a new hard drive on the way. What
that
about
sounds
you?
Good. I'm. What about me? What did I learn this week? You know, I learned that Pima County, Arizona, is going to have a new county recorder, and it's the first Native American to hold the office of county recorder in Pima County.
And that's Tucson, right?
It is, yeah. I think it's in Tucson. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. I learned that in kind of a random way, and then, you know, I learned about the importance of county recorders, which is something we don't think about a lot. It's like, you know, who is the county recorder? What does the county recorder do? But one of the things the county recorder is responsible for is voter registration, you know, counting the votes, all this. So that's really an important public official that has a lot, Arizona anyway, it's an elected position in each of the counties. And just something to think about. Who's your county recorder? Do you know who your county recorder is, and what do they do? It's
we don't have counties here. We have parishes.
You have parishes.
Parishes, yes.
That's right.
I did take the time to vote in our congressional special election. So we had a terrible, it was really a sad situation here. So we had, I think his name was Ralph Abrams, who, when he ran for Congress, U.S. Congress, he said, I'm going to serve 2 terms or 3 terms. I think it might have been 3 terms. Well, you know, we hear that a lot. Well, he did. He ran for 3 terms and then he stopped. He didn't run again. And so it was kind of an open election since there was no incumbent. And this guy, Luke Letlow, who happens to be a graduate of my department at the university, won. There was a runoff, but we have these open elections. And so there were probably 15 people running for that seat. And so it's pretty common for somebody to, for nobody to get 50%. So they, and he won that pretty easily. Young guys, I think he was in his mid, late 30s, gets COVID and dies. No, in between the time he gets elected and the time he would have taken office, you know, this poor guy, he was in good health. He had no, you know, from what I'm hearing, he didn't have any of the typical markers of having real problems. And so he gets COVID and he dies. Well, now his wife was just elected to take his place, which, you know, happens from time to time. But it turns out she's pretty well qualified. She's got a doctorate in communication from the University of South Florida. And to her credit, she's been using what happened to her husband to really push vaccinations and other safe practices. And she's a Republican. You know, this is a Republican parish and district by a lot. But, you know, she's using it to try to change some minds from, you know, from people that might be disinclined to get those kinds of things.
Yeah, well, that's really great to hear. I'm glad that she's using that position to talk about the importance of getting vaccines and the vulnerabilities that we all did face as a result of COVID, because, you know, Republicans, you know, weren't particularly well known for talking about the dangers associated with the virus. But I think it was just such a difficult thing to understand. In some respects, we kept getting different information, but it sounds like that certainly has hit close to home for her. And so I'm glad she's letting everyone know how serious the virus is, and that we're in the fortunate position now that most of us can get vaccines. Glad she's getting that message out there.
Well, and I think there's a second message that's maybe more important. You know, I mean, certainly nobody wanted this congressman-elect to die, but she doesn't get to make a choice about that. You know, mm-hmm. he's gone, and so she has to decide how to best move forward and, you know, what to do with the situation, what to do now. And so she's trying to, you know, use what happened to have some small benefit, maybe a large benefit. So, you know, we're certainly not saying we're glad this guy died. By all accounts, I didn't know him, but by all accounts, he was a really good guy. But, you know, he did. And so now what can she do to maybe help some other people from going through what she and her family, they've got two young kids, you know, so, you know, you have to give her a lot of credit, because it can't be easy for her. I mean, you know, I lost a spouse, you know, when she was quite young. And, you know, it can't be easy to get up in front of the public and say, look, I don't want you to have to go through what I went through, and I don't want your family to have to go through what my family's going through. And so, you know, go get yourself vaccinated. Try to protect yourself against this thing. That's got to be really, really difficult for her to do. So, you know, big shout out to her. I'm glad she won.
Definitely. Definitely good for her.
So what's up on your week? What are you doing this week? Anything fun?
Bernadine is going to come over here this afternoon.
This is a mutual friend of ours. Great person.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I'm gonna see someone, which I haven't done for, you know, almost since COVID began. So we're gonna socially distance and hang out on the deck.
That's great.
And that's the highlight of my week, is seeing someone beside Matt. Not that I don't love to see Matt. I adore him. But boy, he's just about the only person I have seen in person for the last year. So,
and Bernadine is great. She's one of my favorite people.
Yeah, so we should have her on the podcast sometime.
Yeah, we should. She's very, very interesting. She's led an interesting life. So I'm going to eat chocolate chip cookies. I don't want to hear about this from anybody. I'm going to eat chocolate chip cookie dough. So, I know you're not supposed to, but I'm a gonna.
Well, enjoy.
I'm going to. It will be one of the few times I give in to temporary temptation. But,
well, just be sure to focus your attention on the chocolate chip cookie so you get the full benefit of the experience.
I savor. So, plus, it's bad for dogs. I just tell them, no, you can't have any. We don't feed the dogs people food anymore, so. That's not a big problem, but the puppies will be disappointed. I will have constantly at least two eyes staring at me longingly I pretend it's just because they love
That's
me so
tough.
Much. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. We'll get through it. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrea, and thanks, everybody. I think that's good. Anything else you wanted to add?
All right. No, thanks, Craig. See you next week.
The Rational Ignorance podcast is sponsored by Sedona Philosophy, a completely unique tour company that uses Sedona's amazing natural environment to unlock personal growth and insight. Explore nature, culture, and history with a philosophical twist. Visit SedonaPhilosophy.com to learn more.
Thanks, Craig. If you enjoyed this podcast, hit the subscribe button, please rate, review, and tell your friends. Until next time.